Hi, this is Gwen.
Hi, Lynn, this is Lori.
Hi,
We're
this
still
is
waiting
Gwen.
for Eileen.
Okay.
Good morning, it's Eileen.
Hi,
Good morning,
Eileen.
Ella.
It's Lori. I'm here.
Hi, Lori. Glad you're
Hi.
here. Hi. How are you
How
doing?
are you? I'm
Great.
good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, too.
Good, good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you sound great. And sounded like there was somebody else on the line. Does anybody else want to introduce themselves
Hi,
before
my name
we
is
start?
Gwen.
Hi, Gwen.
Hi.
Welcome. Where are you here
Thank
from?
you. Sedona.
Oh, great. Great. Well, not everybody always wants to say hi, and that's fine. I'm always surprised when I get the list after the call to see there's always a lot more people on than have been talking. Do you want to go ahead and get started? Laura, you ready?
Sure, we can do that. Yeah, I'm ready.
Great. Well, I want to start by introducing you and just saying how excited I am to have you be part of the Forgiveness Forum. And everybody kind of on the call knows that the calls are recorded. And recently, there's been somebody who is editing the calls and putting them on a internet, sort of internet radio program. And so it's exciting that they're reaching more people that way. So this part of it, all the stuff, obviously they'll get edited out. But I just wanted you to know that. So my guest today is Lori Rubenstein, and we're going to be talking about helping clients transcend divorce through forgiveness. Lori is a divorce attorney who became a mediator and then became a relationship coach and then also a forgiveness teacher and healer. Lori's based in Sedona, Arizona. She's the author of a couple of books, but the one that I want to focus on today is called Transcending Divorce, A Guide to Personal Growth and Transformation. And she's also writing a book about forgiveness. Her website is LoriRubenstein.com. And I recently, well, I guess it's been a few months, met Lori and was so excited because we just have so much in common in terms of our background and our interests. And so it's been really fun to be comparing notes and looking at ways that we can possibly work together and also just learn from each other. So I asked Lori today to talk about how she works with clients, and in particular who are going through divorce and in the area of forgiveness, since that's the focal point of this forum. And Lori, I'd love to just turn it over to you. And usually what we do is have about 20 minutes, but, you know, whatever you need to talk to us, and then we can open it up to discussion and questions.
Okay, that's awesome. Thanks so much, Eileen. As Eileen said, we met through a mutual friend, and it was so exciting because we have so much in common, and to find somebody else who was an attorney turned mediator turned forgiveness teacher was just like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. So this is a wonderful connection for me. So I guess I want to start by giving you a little bit of background to, for me, on why I got into this area. I was a family law attorney for about 18 years. And what was happening is I really wanted my clients to be healthier than they were. So, you know, as everybody knows, when somebody's going through a divorce, they're probably in one of the worst places in their lives. And the problem for me was that I wanted my clients to be really healthy and to make decisions that were really good, solid decisions. decisions in their best interest. And it's hard when somebody is going through this process because it's like, you know, if you take your brain capacity, it's been diminished by probably 90%, you know, when you're going through this divorce. And ethically, I'm supposed to represent as a family law attorney what somebody wants, not necessarily what is in their best interest. And that's really difficult for me because I was all about the win-win, you know, like what getting somebody the best they could get in court, but not at the expense of their future family interest. So, you know, it was always like a balancing thing for me. It was very difficult. And what I found myself as an attorney being really frustrated about it, I was often in one of two scenarios. And so one scenario is a client comes to me and they're afraid of losing custody. And they will give up everything in their life to avoid losing custody. So, you know, whether they feel guilt and shame, you know, if that's affected them or if they've been abused, or they're just very fearful of that loss, they will give up things like alimony / spousal support. They will give up a house. They'll give up even child support to win custody because they're so afraid they wouldn't. The second scenario is that they're so angry. They're hurt and angry. So they really want to punish the other spouse. So then they wouldn't give in to anything. So there wasn't a, you know, working out of the problems. It was more about, you know, I want to go to court and prove I'm right, when really the judges don't really want to hear all about your drama situation. What they really want to hear about are, you know, the facts and how it all affects the children. So even though I was like not a cookie cutter kind of attorney and was always looking for a creative solution, I felt stuck. I guess that's the best way to put it. I just felt sort of stuck in the situation because I couldn't help people the way I really wanted to. And then the truth was I went through my own divorce. And going through my own divorce, I would say, absolutely made me a better attorney. I learned patience and tolerance and more compassion for what my clients were going through. And so I'm going to share something personal with all of you, you know, the world. And this is sort of a crazy example from my own life. So within a couple of days of finding out about my ex-husband cheating, I found myself in another lawyer's office. This was you know, another family law attorney in town. And I was telling them that I needed the status quo order right away. And a status quo order basically is an order that keeps things as they are right now. So I wanted the kids to be ordered to stay with me so he doesn't take them. And I was like hysterical, you know, because I was really afraid he would take them. And the other attorney just looked at me like, what? Why would you need that? So in her mind, I was being totally, totally unreasonable. I mean, I had absolutely no basis for the order. There was no way my husband was going to take them. But I couldn't even think that way. So I'm telling you this because I think it's really important, especially if you're a professional who works with people who are going through divorces, to really understand that the logic, like even if you have the logic before you're going through the divorce, when you're in the middle of the divorce, somehow it all disappears and you can't even think straight. So, you know, this was sort of a wake-up call for me. So what I did at that point was I started reading all these books on divorce and healing. I went to coach training school, and eventually I went to relationship coach school. But I went to coach training school, and I also got trained as a mediator. So while I was still working within the system, at the same time, I was able to help actually work with my own clients and get them healthier so that they can make these good decisions. I was so frustrated because I kept sending them to counselors, thinking that the counselors were going to fix them. And the counselors weren't fixing them. The counselors were more like, you know, playing into the trauma drama. They would give them medication. And some counselors, obviously, are really great for people going through a divorce. The problem for me was, as an attorney, it wasn't fast enough. Like, I needed, you know, within the 30-day period to get them healthy so that they can make the decisions that I needed them to make, and that wasn't happening. So what I did is I created a class, and it's a program that was based on all my new learnings, and I taught it through the local community college up in Oregon. And eventually out of that, I created the Descending Divorce book, and it was, the book was really based on all the groups that I was working with going through divorce. So my clients and then other people in the community would also come to these classes, and they would last like 8 weeks or 10 weeks, maybe 12 weeks. And I would see what worked and what different didn't work. And, you know, so I would tweak things around. And the book that I have right now is really a result of all the work that works for our clients. So that was pretty exciting for me to help people get through this process faster. And what I noticed going through the class, so there was all this education I was doing as well as emotional processes to get through things. But what my big aha through this process was, oh, my gosh, once they got to forgiveness, everything switched. I was seeing miracle after miracle after miracle. I was seeing lawsuits settling. I was seeing spouses that hated each other start talking to each other. I would see them start putting their children ahead of themselves. I would see like clients of mine who were really angry stop talking to their children about the other spouse, you know, putting the other spouse down to the children or even in front of the children. I mean, things were just switching around. And I realized, you know, this is it. This is the cornerstone of not just divorce, because, you know, I could really see in life itself, once people forgave, they were obviously, we know that you get more peace in your life when you forgive. There was really that inner peace, you know, that the negative self-talk, the trauma, the anger, the bitterness, the hurt, the guilt, the shame. I mean, all those feelings were shifting and changing inside my client right in front of me. So even just talking about it, I can feel the emotion come up because it was such a beautiful thing to watch somebody go from angry and bitter to peaceful and to just being able to breathe again. So knowing that they were now able to make healthier choices, we were able to work together as a team, as a divorce attorney, sometimes the counselors, sometimes the mediators, and the clients. We were able to really be much more of a team and figure out what was in the best interest, usually, of the children. Because I just, you know, for me, going through the system, you will hear all the time that the goal of the course is to do what's in the children's best interest. And I can tell you, being an insider for 18 years, that is absolutely not what happens. It's totally about the rights of the parents. It's not about what's in the kids' best interest. So if I can get the parents to start looking at the kids' best interest, then agreements can be written in a way that really are child-focused. So the process that I teach, that I want to teach you today, is a four-step process. And Eileen and I are so similar. We've read each other's books, and we were just amazed about how similar our thought process is and even our language when it comes to talking about forgiveness. So what I'm going to do is share my four-step process, and I know at other times you've heard Eileen's, and it's great for me now, because what I used to teach was a 26-step process. So I'm making this a lot easier for everybody. So the way I'd like to think about this is using the word ARGG. If you picture ARGG, and my visual for this is, if you can imagine a dog with like a rope in their mouth, shaking their head in front of you going, arr, that's the visual that's going to help you remember what to do with this. So the first step is the A, and A is accepting and acknowledging what really happened. And I want to say, when people first hear that, what their first response is, I'm not going to accept what happened. It's not okay. No, Lori, you don't understand. What they did is not okay. It's unacceptable. And what I'm going to say to you, and when you're working with clients, other clients also, is that it's accepting the reality of what happened doesn't mean acceptance in the way of it's okay. So accepting and acknowledging what happens, because you have to have a foundation to build on. So you have to, if you're in your head making up stories about what happened, but you're not moving forward based on the reality of what happened, you're not going to really be able to move forward, and you're certainly not going to be able to get to a place that makes your situation better if you're not starting at the reality of your situation. So I want to give you a tool that you can use for yourself or for your clients. And it's really simple. So you have somebody write out the story from their point of view. So the spouse who's writing this is the one that's hurt and probably needs to forgive. So with all the drama, you know, I can't believe he did this to me. You know, he left me with the children, and I didn't have a job, and he wouldn't give me any money, and didn't pay the rent in the house, and we were homeless, and, you know, I mean, write it all. Like, get all of that out there, and, you know, how am I supposed to do this on my own? You know, write it there. And then you're going to write the story from your spouse's point of view. So you're going to literally put yourself in your spouse's situation and write what the story is from their point of view. And then the final part of this tool is that you're going to take both of your stories and you're going to look at them and then write a third story from those two stories and from the place of the neutral observer. You could also call that from God's point of view. You know, like, imagine being higher and being able to look down at this situation and say, oh, this is the truth of what happened. This, you know, somewhere in here, he said this, she said this, he felt this, she felt that, and this is what happened. So you're going to write out that truth and then use that peace as the acceptance of what the reality is, what really happened. And there's another benefit to doing this besides just acceptance and acknowledging. And the purpose is to really transform your own thinking to help you get out of that black, white, right, wrong thinking. So it's really going to help you. It's one of the tools we use in coaching, actually, to always see things from other perspectives. So step two in this is taking personal responsibility for your piece in the situation. And already from the stories that you wrote out, you can see that you can start understanding what your piece is. And this is so important because if you don't ever get to the point where you stop blaming the other person, you will always remain a victim. And you don't want to be a victim. You don't want to be powerless. To feel more empowered, you have to really get to the point of knowing that everything happens for a reason. And that reason is almost always, this is a hint, about how you are now stronger than you were before. What are you learning? There's usually a spiritual reason behind everything that's going on. And it's really for your own soul's personal growth. So if you believe that you are really a spirit, a soul, having a human experience, then you're going to say, all these things that happen in my life are for a reason. And we all have times in our lives that we can look back upon and say, at the time, I didn't know why this was happening to me, but now I understand. So knowing that, that this can be one of those things also in your life. I don't know why I'm going through this divorce now. I don't know why I have to go through all of this hell. But know that this will pass, and I'm going to learn something. It's going to change my life in some way. That's really important. And so when you start looking at your own personal piece in this, and I'm going to give you an example, you're going to know that your soul's going to grow from this. So realizing that the reason this happened is usually because there's an expectation or an assumption about marriage and the way it would go and how, what would happen between a couple. And someone in that partnership or both people really crushed those expectations. So maybe the fault is that you had expectations, or that you made assumptions. That literally could be it. For me, what I learned was that I was really controlling in the relationship. And I could literally understand after the divorce that I was acting more like a mother than I was as a wife. So taking responsibility for me meant my piece in this was, this is who I became. How attractive is that, right? So I knew that before I needed to get into my next relationship, I needed to work on that issue. And what I can tell you is that it's taken me a really long time to work on that issue. And, it's still something that does come up from time to time, but nothing like it did in my first marriage. So step three, this is similar to what we were just talking about. This is about the gifts and the lessons. Why did you choose that partner? How are you different now than you were when you got married? What do you know about yourself now that you didn't know before? During a divorce, it's really easy to blame and to be negative. But what I had to realize is, for 10 years, I thought that I had a good marriage. And when I found out that he was cheating on me, what I did was I invalidated the entire 10 years of the marriage. And I said, nothing was good. It was all a lie. you know, those things that people say, and it's not true. I'm going to say it's so important to honor the past, and I even wrote this down. It's a quote that I have in my book, and it's from somebody called Ellen Sue Stern in her book, Starting Over, Meditations for Divorced Women. So here's the quote. What we remember, what we choose to let go, and what we choose to keep is purely up to us. We can remember our love at its best, as it was in the springtime. There came a time when it simply needed to be over, but at one time, however long ago, it was, oh, so sweet. And I share that with you because I think it's so important to remember that when you're going through a divorce, you're seeing everything negatively, but remember that you fell in love with this person at one time, and you created children with this person. There is some good here, and you have to also remember that. And that's an amazing gift when you can get past your tendency to just invalidate your entire marriage, but you can actually honor and accept it. That's a fabulous gift, and it's a gift for your children, as you can imagine. So step four in this process is gratitude, the last G. And being grateful is one of the best ways I know for staying positive and really continuing our own personal growth, but in a really healthy way. So, you know, one of the things you can be grateful for is that somehow you know you can survive a divorce. Because when you're, if you're anything like I was, you know, when I was married, I was like, oh, my God, I don't think I could ever handle this. I couldn't have custody of the kids alone. How am I supposed to have custody at work and do my volunteer stuff and take care of myself? You know, it's impossible. And somehow, you're capable of doing all of that. And we might not know how, but we have to be really grateful that somehow we're able to do that. And for people who are professionals working with their clients who are going through a divorce, who are thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this, we literally have to hold a perspective for them that they're not failures, that they are good enough, they're whole, this is just a process, they're going to come out the other side. You know, we need to know that their very intense feeling sometimes of guilt and shame is something that they can get through and they can get on the other side. So when we hold them big, then they can start, in fact, holding themselves big, and they can choose other perspectives other than the one of, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. Or, you know, anger, anger, anger. So we can be a beacon, literally a beacon of light, and show our clients the way. And sometimes that means really checking out our own attitudes and making sure that we don't get enmeshed in their own drama, trauma stuff. So when we encourage forgiveness, we need to remember that that for people like myself going through the divorce, I was able to forgive, but I was never able to condone his behavior. That's okay. And I also didn't have to trust him again, because I remember right at the very beginning, I thought about the idea of forgiveness. And what that led me to at the very beginning was trying to get back together with him three times, because I thought I should trust him again, because that meant trusting him again. That is not what forgiveness means. You can have really good, strong boundaries, and we should help our clients also learn about boundaries to protect themselves. So, you know, looking at the behavior, saying, you know, forgiving the behavior, but that doesn't mean I'm going to be a doormat in the future. That doesn't mean I'm going to be a victim in the future. It just means that I forgive the past, and I'm going to be strong and stable a strong and stable person with really clear boundaries before I move into my own future. And that's what we can help our clients with. So for professionals, I think it really means having grace and compassion for people as they go through this process. And for the people going through the process, I think it's really about being grateful for your strength and your ability to work through one of the hardest experiences, but one of the greatest gifts. I always say divorce is a gift. And most people, not everyone, but most people who have gotten through the process of forgiveness in a year or two or three after a divorce will say, this was the greatest gift ever. I've learned so much about myself, and I'm in such a better place than I was during the marriage. So I guess that's probably all I wanted to say right now, and I'm totally open for questions or comments if anybody has any.
Thank you, Lori. That was really great. Yes, I'm going to just start by just thanking you for all that. And I like the way you frame the process very much. And, of course, everything. As you said before, it just seems, you know, very parallel. And I like the way you're putting it together. I have some questions, but let's see if anybody else does before I start. Does anybody else have a comment or question for Lori?
This is Katharina. I do.
Great. Hi, Katharina.
Hi. So for the first step, you gave us a specific tool, but for the other steps, you didn't give us any tools, so I'm kind of curious about. It all makes sense to me, but I'm kind of curious about how do you do it.
Right, right. So one of the things that you can, for the second step in taking personal responsibility for your peace, you know when you write out from your spouse's perspective that, you know, what they're saying, I would like you to ask the questions, is that true? Is it true?
Mm-hmm.
What about this can I accept? Because I remember it was really interesting. So imagine the scenario. So, you know, my husband's cheating on me, but somehow he's blaming me for being so controlling. So I'm like, no, that doesn't give you the right to do what you did. And I was really pissed because it felt so immature to me for him to think like that what he did is okay based on what I was doing, because at no time during the marriage did he say, we have a problem, I don't want you to treat me like this, we should go to counseling, you know, the things that you would think somebody would say. But yet, after I was then fighting against that, I was able to say, it's true. I could really see so many places where it's true. So step two, I would say, go back to their story and ask if that's true. The other thing you can do is if you have some really good friends who would be honest with you, you can ask them about how they viewed your marriage. And what did they think could have been your piece in this? It would be really interesting, especially if you have... I love this. When I was a divorce attorney, people would come in oftentimes with their family members. You know, they'd come in with their parents to, you know, support them. And I would often ask the parents, did you agree with this marriage? And almost always the parents had a great story to tell. And literally, I mean, it was just amazing because the person sitting there said, no way, no way, no way would I have ever listened to my parents if they told me at the beginning this.
but everything that they thought really was true and did happen. So asking your parents, if you can keep an open mind, that is, you know, ask them, that would help too. So with the gifts and the lessons, I think it's about answering the questions that I had right at the beginning about why did you choose that partner? How are you different now than you were when you got married? What do you know now about yourself that you didn't know before? For me, for example, one of the things, this was so interesting to me, my ex-husband taught at a college, and he was just a really, really good teacher. In fact, that's how he was teaching me Hebrew, and that's how we met. He taught me Hebrew, and he was this great teacher. And I would always say, he's such a great teacher, he's such a great teacher. And never once did I ever think about that for myself. And here I am teaching, right? So that was an amazing gift for me, you know, learning that that I am a teacher. Another gift, and the way I learned it, was towards the end of the marriage, I kept asking him, are we okay? Is everything all right? Like, I don't feel like things are good between us. Like, what's going on? And he would always like, oh, yeah, everything's fine, you know, I'm just getting older, blah, blah, blah. And I had a gut intuition that something was wrong. And one of my gifts, and you might find this in your own marriage too, in your own relationship, is to start listening to my gut more, to start realizing that, oh, I do have this gift of intuition. He actually said to me afterwards too, he said, you should listen to yourself more often because you knew you knew that something was wrong. So I would say that with each individual, it's going to be different what the gifts are. But really asking those questions, how am I different now? Who am I now that I wasn't before? What can I do with my life now that I didn't know before? And the other big gift, here's a big, 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 big one that I didn't talk about, is when we're going through a divorce and we're losing our identity and we don't know who we are, we start asking these amazing questions like, who am I? What is my purpose in life? Why am I here? And that is something that if you're no longer so-and-so's wife, you really start questioning, you know, what is going on here? Who am I? I remember, and I tell this story in the book, being in a grocery store, and I was in the vegetable area, and it was a week or two after the divorce. And I just stood there flabbergasted that I didn't know what it was I liked. Because I knew what I bought, because it was what, you know, I bought fruits and vegetables that made everybody happy. But I went back to like, well, what is it that I like to eat? Not what do we like to eat? So that's something to be extremely grateful for. Eileen, do you have any other ideas for tools in those last two areas?
Well, as you said, I do think those are very individual, but I, you know, similarly, they're just areas, especially the gifts, are personal reflection areas. I'll ask people, I mean, I think the first thing is sometimes referencing, as you did, Lori, with us, the fact that we all know, we all have examples of where something's happened to us that is really just the hardest thing we've ever been through, and we see it as something really negative. But then later, we come to understand that it was actually one of the best things that ever happened. So I think presencing that truth is helpful. And I, you know, always do that in a forgiveness training or when I'm working with people, and then asking them, you know, just very directly, have you thought about that? Are there things that you can see have been, you know, positive things that have come out of this for you? And sometimes it's lessons, sometimes it's opportunities, you know, all of the things that you've just shared, Lori, are good ones, you know, just all that, all the places it takes you that you might not otherwise go, and questions you're asking yourself. So, but just asking people to affirm those things, and, you know, usually people, most people will say, yeah, I, you know, it's true, here's something I've noticed. But if they don't, then I just suggest that they give that some thought. And sometimes it takes some time to get the perspective on it. But I know for sure that's true. And there's a quote, if you've received an email from me in the last few months, you've seen it, because I put it on my email. I like it so much. It's from Peace Pilgrim, and it says, no problem ever comes to us that does not have a purpose in our life. And I really believe that's true. So our job is to discover what it is. So I think it goes back to holding that confidence, that knowing, that beacon, as you say, that then allows people to move into that and discover it for themselves. And gratitude, I mean, once you find the gift, it naturally flows. And that's one of my definitions. If you haven't really found the gift, unless it opens that up in you, because the gift is something always so beautiful. It's not ever a little thing. If you have had something really hard happen, you can be assured that the gift is equally wonderful as to how hard it was. And if you haven't hit that, then you haven't found it yet. And so that's almost my definition. You know it when you find it, because it's almost miraculous. It's so good. And then gratitude is just right there.
I love that.
Yeah. For the whole, for everything, for the gift, for the experience, and even for the other person and all the misery. Because you realize you wouldn't have gotten that jewel unless you had gone through that. And it's that good. And that's the, so, this, Katrina, I hope that helps flesh out some of the ways.
Yeah,
it was a great question.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Are there other questions for Lori? I'm going to ask you one, Lori. You talked about how forgiveness is the key, is the turning point. And I, of course, obviously agree with that. And when you describe this work, it just seems to me that what client wouldn't benefit from doing this work before they try to negotiate or mediate? And I'm curious, in your practice, how you, especially when you were working with client, you were the lawyer, is this something you would try to take them through before, at an early stage? I'm just curious how you brought that into your practice.
Yeah, that's such a good question, because people really have to be ready for this. And literally,
mm-hmm.
for some people, it might be years after the divorce
mm-hmm.
that they can really find the forgiveness. So the answer would be, no, I don't try to push it, even though the agreement would be better. But what I do try to do are things like, really, like, let's say they have kids and they can't, let's say they have kids and one person is saying, I'm not giving him any visitation because he cheated on me. Let's just use that. I mean, that happens a lot. So that's
mm-hmm.
not an unusual example. What I will absolutely do is take them to the perspective of the children. And it's easy for me because I was a child of divorce. So I could say to them how important it is to have both parents in their life. I can explain to them what they get from the other parent that they don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for
It's so interesting. So, like, when people go through a divorce, issues come up, like, he's always throwing the kids up in the air, and it's so dangerous, and the kids are frightened. You know, men do that. That's part of what kids get, you know, from men, is the playfulness and the, you know, at one point when you were married and he was throwing them up in the air, you probably stood back and went, oh, he loves them so much. Look at him playing. You know, don't turn it around now and make him an evil person because he doesn't do things the way you do it. So remembering that the two parents are in their life to give the kids very different lessons and different love, and love looks different from both parents' perspective. And unless somebody is really actually hurting the children or really bad for the children, it's always better. So I can do things like that, Eileen.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're, you know, it's putting ideas out there. It's like setting things up so that when they're ready to do the work, they can really do the work. I've had people who have fought for 7 years over parenting plans, and where there's a fight every holiday and there's problems, and they come to me for mediation. And at that point, I will say things to them like, I'm not going to mediate this case unless you both go through the forgiveness process with me first. So I will force them at that point, because I'll say, this is bullshit. This is time. Grow up. You know, you need to move on with your life. You need to stop blaming them for everything that's happened in your life in the last 7 years.
And so in that case, you would have them do this first?
Yeah. So then I would have them do this. But, you know, there's things in the Transcending Divorce book that help people to build up to the forgiveness process. And an example of that is, let's look at the dreams that
mm-hmm.
were lost.
I just want to say that
divorce.
That I did the book and read the book and did parts of it because of my own divorce, and I found the book to be quite helpful and powerful, and it's been 3 or 4 years since my divorce, but it just helped kind of flesh out, you know, other pieces. But that particular piece I thought was really, really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The dream.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I just got chills when you said that because I remember also doing this and
mm-hmm.
looking at the dreams of the marriage and how that supported your own dreams, like actually separating out the dreams of the marriage versus your own dreams and what was important about the dreams in the marriage and how you take what was important about that and recreate it so that you still have these dreams and goals for your future rather than saying, oh, that's it, they're lost, I'm never going to have them again. It
mm-hmm.
may look different, but it could still be fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
And that was
yeah,
another question. Go ahead, somebody
sorry,
else.
Go ahead.
Was there another question? And I have another one, but I thought I heard somebody else. Maybe not. So, Lori, it sounds like you've done this work with people both as their lawyer, as their mediator, and then sometimes just as their coach, not just, but as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe just talk a little bit more about the professional capacities and how in which you've worked with people at this level?
Sure. So as the attorney, I mean, that was really the impetus to, you know, wanting them to do better. And then a lot of it was as a teacher, where there's where you're educating people. So I had to, you know, I wasn't a licensed counselor, so of course I couldn't be a counselor, but I did have the background where I had my bachelor's in social work,
And as an attorney, you're always counseling people. So that's where the counselor at law comes from. So I counseled people as the attorney, but really through those groups. And that's where I got to see what worked, what didn't work. And then as a coach, when I went through coaching, I would work with people. And the whole goal of coaching was really, how do you move on with your life? You know, how do you stay, how do you get unstuck? And when you think about being stuck in a divorce, it's so sad. It's so sad to see somebody who doesn't find happiness in their life because of something that happened in their past. It's just, it's wrong. Oh, it's just heartbreaking to see somebody not be able to do that. So coaching is really about finding and answering those big questions that I mentioned earlier. Who are you? What is your life purpose? You know, why are you here on earth? What are your goals? How do you meet your goals? You know, what are you doing with your life? What is the best thing you can do with your life? Really stepping up. And I think for all professionals, whether it's counselors, even judges, attorneys, I'm going to even say people like yoga teachers, meditation teachers, everybody has worked with somebody going through a divorce, even best friends, right? Everybody has helped somebody going through a divorce. And one of the greatest things you can do for them is to hold them big and hold them in a place of you're not a victim, you can get through this, what do you want in your life, let's go for it. And if you can just do that for somebody, you've done everything.
Yeah, that's very powerful. That's true. That's very true. And not just divorce, but really any difficult thing.
Right.
That we go through. That's right. To remind people of their potential in ourselves when it's us. Yeah. Yeah. I also, agree with what you're saying about that this is actually just such almost a shortcut to me of something that could, a process that could take people years of spiritual work or therapy. But this seems to me, the forgiveness work, that is, just something that just cuts through very quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm hearing
a lot of
loud noise. Am I the only one who's hearing this?
What's that?
No, it just stopped.
It just stopped, yeah. I couldn't hear anything because there was so much side noise, but now it's
okay.
Gone. Thank you.
Okay, no, I didn't hear it.
It's good now.
It's good now, yeah. It was hard to hear during
okay.
that.
Yeah,
you
I was just talking about how the result, this is a very direct method to get at some very deep healing.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Course in Miracles, I don't know if people are familiar with that, but, you know, every religion talks about forgiveness. I mean, that's what's so interesting is that through all time, you know, we have learned and been taught about forgiveness, yet it almost has become a should rather than a spiritual experience. And, I think that you don't have to be spiritual at all to go through forgiveness. But yet it's such a, it comes from a place where you're really honoring your soul and the other person's soul. It's that idea of namaste, you know, my soul recognizes your soul. My higher self recognizes the higher self in you.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are all here together for a purpose. And, you know, when we say, I love the idea of my ex-husband being one of my very best soul friends, from when we were, before we came into human existence, that he was willing to be the bad guy for me, for my soul, for my growth. And what an amazing gift he gave to me, being willing to be the bad guy. I think about this with sexual abusers, you know, people who come in. I mean, I know this sounds crazy to some people listening to this, though, but imagine being willing to come in and be so awful as to be the person who is willing to abuse a baby, to be willing to abuse a child for their soul's growth. And I know, I mean, everybody, I can almost like take a deep breath. That doesn't excuse the behavior at all, because as a society, our piece that we play in this is to say it's not okay. Yet, as a soul, we're so easily able to forgive and to recognize that somebody loves us so much to do something so awful for our growth. We can only be grateful for that. And I look at my ex-husband, and it's exactly the way I feel. And I think, and he's done all this spiritual work. He's like a triple black belt now, and he, you know, has found spirituality through that. And so, you know, I think he's totally forgiven me too. And we're not friends, but we're at peace.
Great. Lori, thank you so much. This hour has gone by really quickly, and I just want to save a couple minutes to make some announcements and wrap up. I want to thank you. I've really enjoyed what you've shared, and I hope that it's given people a taste of some ways of working with clients, especially in the divorce arena. And if anybody's interested in getting more information about Lori, it's Lori Rubenstein, RubenStein.com. And Lori, anything that you want to announce before we wrap up?
No, not yet, but it's, I do want to, first of all, say thank you so much for having me. I just love you. I love the work that you do out there. And I'm looking forward to us doing more work together in the future. And if anybody, one of the ways I'm really talking about what I'm doing is on Facebook. So if anybody just types in my name on Facebook, we can become connected and you can learn about any upcoming events that way.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, what I did want to let people know is that Lori and I actually are going to do some work together in the fall. And starting in November, we're going to do a series of three teleseminars that are really designed for anybody who wants to, might be somebody going through a divorce, the kind of people that we've been talking about on this call, and it's going to be about forgiveness and divorce. So it could be you may have clients who would benefit or friends who would benefit. And, of course, we'll be sending more information. We're just in the planning stages right now, but it's going to start, I think it's November 12th, and it's three Monday evenings. Did I get that right, Lori? I think
I know that it's in November, but I don't have my calendar.
Right. I believe it's start November 12th, November 26th, and December 10th. And I meant to have those dates in front of me. But like I said, I'll be sending something more out as that gets closer. And I'm really looking forward to that. So thank you, everybody who's on the call. And thanks again to Lori Rubenstein. And look forward to our next call, which will be in August. No, this is August. September 6th. September 6th. So we'll see you all, after Labor Day. It's hard to believe.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks, Eileen. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.